We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello and welcome back. I am anti-consumerism painting waiting to be sold for millions of dollars, and your host, Matt Harvey, and this is another episode of the Bearer of Weird News. Before we get into it, a couple of small things up top. I do have digital versions of my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, available at the Brighton Fringe. For those of you who are up in the UK, if you know anyone who lives in the UK, things are a bit dark over there at the moment. And I'm sure you could use a couple of laughs, hear some stories about some stupidity. And those tickets are available now. They're only £5. So that's a super cheap ticket. That same show is also available digitally as part of the Melbourne Fringe Festival, which will be going up on sale towards the end of this month. I think the 22nd of October is when those dates start. I will be doing a couple of runs of my news quiz show just for funny. So please do check those out. They're going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to have some great guests on those shows. And you know, it's been a very interesting run of news events, so we should have some great questions ready for those shows. But enough of that for now. That's not why you're here. Let's get to the news. I will once again be your bearer of weird news. Starting off, as is our new tradition, we'll be covering some of the shorter stories that we don't have time to get into more detail. To begin, street artist and Z-list Batman villain Banksy has lost a copyright battle for one of his most iconic images, Flower Thrower. He lost it over refusing to reveal his identity. His greatest power has become his greatest weakness. Besides, the internet knows who Banksy is. He's the guy from Art Attack, or he's the frontman from Massive Attack, or late 20th century artist Walter Richard Sickert. Take your choice. The street artist has previously declared that copyright is for losers, except in this lawsuit, I guess, because the copyright went to the winner. Banksy had applied for an EU trademark for the piece 6 years ago, but this was challenged by a card company because the artist did not want to merchandise it. Because why create a thing if you don't want to make money from it, right? Right? Anybody? It's why we have sweatshops and child actors. So Banksy opened a store where he sold his works, including Flower Thrower, saying the shop was created for the sole purpose of fulfilling trademark categories. However, the judge said his intentions to circumnavigate the law rather than commercialize his goods were dishonest, and only corporations are allowed to circumnavigate the law for amusement and profit. We wouldn't want stores acting dishonestly. It might set some kind of precedent. Time to get excited about the upcoming election, as alleged wage thief and sleepy Senator Clive Palmer is doing another in his line of unsuccessful reboots, which include Robotic Jurassic Park and The Titanic. Two films famous for going smoothly and not having a single hiccup, is attempting another disastrous reboot, rebooting his run for Parliament. The list for most reboots goes Batman, Spider-Man, Clive Palmer. Clive has started his latest run by getting his company, Mineralogy, to donate to his political party, Clive Palmer's United Australia Party, a very generous $2 million. You know, some people, cynical people, will claim that he is just selfishly squandering money that he should be giving to his former employees. But I think it's good to see that he is living up to his party's principles and uniting Palmers. He's sort of like the Voltron of Australian politics. You know, if Team Voltron had their wages stolen. Extinction Rebellion protesters were recently arrested at the site of a protest. Deputy Commissioner Sir Steve House is upset that the protesters go floppy when being arrested, saying that they need to grow up and act like adults. Having worked with kids for many years, I am always amazed at the way that they naturally fall into large groups of non-violent resistance over large-scale ideas such as the future of the planet, ethical consumption, and whether or not they will end up being the leaders of border tribes in either a Mad Max or Waterworld scenario. But they should definitely try more mature responses, like pepper spraying people, pushing over old men who are causing trouble, and kneeling on people's necks who they don't agree with. The Trump campaign has started putting out election ads using patriotic stock footage like Russian sky, Greek mountains, French ground. The image in the ad is a stock photo available on Shutterstock with the title Military Silhouettes of Soldiers and Air Force Against the Backdrop of Sunset Sky. Director of the Center for Analysis of Strategies and Technologies in Moscow, Ruslan Pukov, pointed out that at least one of the soldiers in the image was carrying a Russian-made AK-74 assault rifle, and that the jets were MiG-29 jets, which were designed by the Soviet Union in the 1970s to combat US fighter jets. Like all campaign ads, it is just a clear warning of the future Americans can expect under 4 more years of Trump, and it is refreshingly the most honest campaign ad I have ever seen. Country you only think about because of Futurama, Barbados, is joining the angry teenager stage of colonialism, along with countries like Canada and Australia, and will seek to remove the Queen as head of state. The traditional ceremony will be observed, wherein Prince Charles comes in for a live sobbing at the idea that he is losing yet another theoretical job, and an effigy of the Queen is put in a guillotine as we all shout, "Off with the head of state." Parks Australia has asked Google to remove images of the top of the sacred indigenous site Uluru, which allows users to walk on its summit, defying the wishes of the traditional owners to not allow people to walk on the site. Google promptly followed through with the request, setting a precedent for the Australian government on how quickly Indigenous matters could be settled. When asked for a comment, a spokesperson for the government replied, "Google, never heard of it." Now, if the Indigenous people have a request that they want met, can they kindly join the queue line or provide proof that they own some coal or are an influential newspaper? Obviously, The Guardian doesn't count. David Attenborough has broken the Instagram record previously held by Jennifer Aniston for fastest to reach 1 million followers. Problem is, of course, everyone is just checking in to make sure he's still alive. 2020 has been hard enough. This is one thing we don't need. Glenn Wheatley, manager for singer in his 12th year of retirement touring, John Farnham, has denounced anti-lockdown protesters who used his client's song The Voice during a protest sing-along. This is not the first time this particular song has been used by protesters. Wheatley has had enough, saying while it seemed like a good time, this time he is playing to win and he would dare to dream. But if these protesters are anything like Farnham's retirement, this won't be the last time. Police in Vietnam have confiscated an estimated 345,000 used condoms, which had been cleaned and resold as new. However, when questioned, the criminals said the ring was closer to 500,000, but you just caught them on a cold day. Really, it was more of a magnum ring. The police said that they were able to apprehend the ring due to the long and hard work of the local public who provided a tip about the happenings. They advise all citizens to speak up if they suspect any wrongdoings, even if it is just a tip. Listeners should note that the reuse of condoms is not advised. No matter how well you boil them and put them on a wooden phallus to reshape them, this sort of behaviour is not on. And if it's not on, it's not on. In Ireland, the 5-judge court ruled the bread in Subway's heated sandwiches falls outside the statutory definition because it has a sugar content of 10% of the weight of the flour included in the dough and is therefore not bread. Said Subway executives, "Let them eat cake, and our new diet cake, cake with stevia, and the 11-inch foot-long cake, comes with our choice of salad, meat, and diabetes. You can choose type 1, 2, and for a limited time only, type 3, only available in stores." Because the Subway heated sandwiches, such as a hot meatball sandwich, did not contain bread as defined, it could not be said to be food for the purposes of the second schedule of the act. It's like this judge has never, ever eaten fast food. Nobody who goes to a fast food restaurant was seeking anything that can be defined as food, but rather cheap filler that will hold off death for 6 to 8 hours. The Tokyo Olympics are set to return in 2021 after being delayed by COVID-19. The Olympics are said to have a renewed focus that will be more somber and frugal. They are even updating the Olympic slogan for the event: faster, higher, sadder, cheaper. Some major changes will be made: less in seating capacity, less decorations, and less countries allowed to fly internationally. So Japan should do really well this next year. They're even changing the awards athletes will receive. Gold medals will become a year's supply of toilet paper, silver medals will become a 200 pack of face masks, and a bronze medal will remain the same, because it is the perfect item to maintain social distancing. Nobody wants to speak to a bronze medalist. As the athletes can't train like they normally would, it will likely have an impact on athletic ability and records. If I use my JobKeeper to sustain me between now and the Olympics, I think I'm in with as much of a chance as these former Olympic behemoths. We really are all in this together. As always, some new sports will be added to the now 2021 Olympics. The newer sports will also reflect the post-COVID world, with a mixed doubles grape throw, the 200 meters don't reveal that you aren't wearing pants on a Zoom call, and the 1,500 meter and the 1,500 meter dodge, where we let a large group of unmasked audience members into the crowd to shout about human rights, and the athletes must avoid them at all costs while trying to get to the finish line. The game is actually 2 weeks long, and the last one to contract COVID is the true winner. Americans are being bribed to vote by so many means, be it fear, intimidation, or simply by the promise that if 2,500 people take action via his headcount website to register for the forthcoming US election, Samuel L. Jackson has promised to teach them to swear in 15 languages. As pop culture is the number one export out of the US, you know, aside from forced coups and guns, and their current president is a reality TV star, it is only logical that more and more TV personalities will offer up exclusive fan experiences if you register to vote. Jerry Seinfeld has already said that he will explain to you what the deal is with 15 different household items. Tom Cruise will personally remove 15 thetans from you. Netflix will commission 15 new TV show ideas from you. Weird Al will write 15 parody songs for you. And Disney will design 15 uniquely ethnically insensitive characters that will not age well specifically for you. The choice is yours, so sign up now. Weta Digital Workshop, the place responsible for the effects on the Lord of the Rings films, has had former employees come out and complain that the workplace is toxic. I must say, I'm not at all surprised. The place is full of trolls. Moving on to our biggest stories now, let's start with money laundering news. The federal government's slow pace in delivering the tools to combat companies phoenixing, a stunning display in which a company bursts into flames, burning up all its feathers, debts, and employee entitlements, only to rise from the ashes as a beautiful new company, is becoming increasingly obvious. Money laundering has delivered benefits to the most expected constituency, organized crime. Given it is only them and politicians using the method, it's no real surprise that they are benefiting the most, and that the government is really dragging their feet on this. I don't see why this is a problem though. I mean, the government has been promising for years that they will create an economy with jobs and growth, and reminding us
of the best form of welfare, and it has the obvious answer is a job.
And surely, the best form of job is one that is profitable due to high demand, like drugs. As long as you pay your taxes.
Here's your cash. You're out on the town. Yeah, you're partying hardy. You're knocking boots with the chicky babes. And, oh, who's this? It's the tax man. And he's looking at you. Now, what does he see? He sees a young fella with a big fancy house, unlimited cash supply, and no job. Now, what is the conclusion the tax man makes?
I'm a drug dealer.
Wrong. Million times worse. You're a tax cheat. What do? They take every penny and you go in the can for felony tax evasion. Ouch!
Revenue loss from money laundering, tax evasion schemes, and phoenixing of companies, often orchestrated by unscrupulous accountants and lawyers, is costing Australian taxpayers tens of billions of dollars each year. If only we could rush into law the changes, like they did the cash benefits to the Murdoch-owned Foxtel, which only cost the taxpayers tens of millions of dollars. A relative bargain, really. And there is growing evidence that organised crime syndicates are now making these a central part of their criminal enterprises. Not to mention the legitimate businesses who are following suit, like Amazon, who pays no taxes and reports losses despite its owner being the first man to become a trillionaire, and having spare spaceship money to throw around, like Apple, who has suicide nets at their manufacturing plants, and Qantas, Wesfarmers, certain celebrity chefs, and many other perfectly legal businesses who make their perfectly legal money by nearly perfectly legal practice of wage theft. The federal government has been extremely slow in delivering the tools and funding that regulators need to combat it because of resistance from conservative members of cabinet, who argue that it would impose increased regulation on businesses, like putting them on some sort of cashless card that monitors their spending and ensures that they aren't up to anything shady. And while the government finally passed anti-phoenixing laws in February after years of debate, and in June passed laws that will provide a key weapon in the fight against the practice, that being a lifetime identification number for company directors known as the DIN, I suspect it might not be enough. And I propose that we finally take on the ethical practice of electronically tagging CEOs. We wouldn't want them wandering the streets and causing mass casualties of the native fauna, the blue-collar worker bird who has almost gone extinct due to the predatory practices of domesticated CEOs who aren't kept indoors. On to a distinct lack of flight news. Qantas, Dustin Hoffman's favourite airline, have really been struggling this year with layoffs, groundings, and poor Qantas boss Alan Joyce's pay falling to only $1.7 million. Must be rough, hey? And with interstate and international flight bookings increasingly far off, Qantas has had to figure out how to overcharge people for packets of peanuts and breathing in other people's farts, and are gambling on a new venture. Flights to nowhere. As I am at risk of turning this into an unpaid ad for Qantas, let me just say, this is a stupid waste of money and an unnecessary risk for the staff who will be forced to serve you on your 7-hour scenic flight to the land of nowhere and back. The flight consists of low-level flybys of Australian destinations across Queensland, the Northern Territory and New South Wales, and includes what I assume they think is exciting and exclusive opportunity to participate in a live auction of original and limited Qantas 747 memorabilia. I can't tell you how much I've been hearing people crying out for that sweet 747 memorabilia. I suppose we just have to wait until they kill off Jetstar before we can get the really good discounted merchandise. This is as exciting an opportunity as the time my job offered me the exclusive opportunity to express my interest in remaining employed when they were looking to make redundancies at the start of COVID-19. While the funds from the live auction will be donated to the Royal Institute of Deaf and Blind Children, I am pretty confident the deaf kids would get more out of it if the money was just donated directly and not as a means for Qantas to write off old merch. For lunch fans, the lunch menu was designed by celebrity wage thief Neil Perry. There will be a surprise celebrity host, MC, and entertainment. There will be commemorative flight certificate so that you can remember the time that you wasted nearly $800 on a flight to nowhere. Qantas business pajamas and an amenity kit because you won't be taking a long haul flight anytime soon. Not to mention a gift bag, so that should be nice. At least you'll feel like you got a little bit of something, hey? Moving on to fake news news. Last bastion of straight up lying to people for fun and profit, Fox News allowed a whistleblower claiming China created COVID-19 coronavirus onto the not at all news, though it is pretending hard to be seen as news news program, Tucker Carlson Tonight. The whistleblower was named Li Mengyan and claimed she was a virologist. The fact that she appeared on the show, Tucker Carlson Tonight, should have been people's first concern. Tucker Carlson Tonight is a bigger red flag than the time that 536 people formed a Chinese flag in the water. After Fox aired its interview with Yan, Facebook labeled the clip, which was posted to the official Tucker Carlson Tonight page, and shared tens of thousands of times, probably by your aunt and uncle, as false information. Look, when you are called out by Facebook for spreading misinformation, you know you have officially become a misinformation super spreader. Congratulations, Tucker and crew. It's been a long road, and I am sure you have so many people to thank. But they wouldn't think you were being sincere anyway, so we can just skip right past that. The only thing clear is that she is the lead author of the paper that has been posted to Zenodo and is entitled Unusual Features of the SARS-CoV-2 Genome Suggesting Sophisticated Laboratory Modification Rather Than Natural Evolution and Delineation of Its Probable Synthetic Route. Zenodo is a general-purpose, open-access repository developed under the European Open Air Program and operated by CERN, which makes it sound pretty fancy. And in a sense, it is. But having a paper on Zenodo doesn't mean much. Practically anyone can post their paper on Zenodo. All you need is internet access. The only advantage to it being stored at CERN is that maybe, they will send it through the Hadron Collider and atomize it into God particles, or something sciencey like that. The four authors of the paper, Li Mengyan, Xu Kang, Ji Guan, and Shang Chung Hu, all have the Rule of Law Society and Rule of Law Foundation as their affiliation. The foundation was formed by former Trump administration staffer and living red flag and grifter of donors who simply wanted to build a wall to keep out people who aren't like them, Steve Bannon. The society lists its mission to expose corruption, obstruction, illegality, brutality, false imprisonment, excessive sentencing, harassment, and inhumanity perverse in the political, legal, business, and financial systems of China. Which is great for Bannon back when he was a member of the anti-China White House, as it put him in good standing with a man who hated and loved Xi Jinping on any given day, depending on how many deals he had going on at the time. But the frank and open truth of the matter is, this is a piece of questionable science presented on The Tucker Carlson Show, a show so notoriously unreliable, Fox's own lawyers have said that you cannot believe it. And then there's US District Judge Mary Kay Viscockle, whose opinion leans heavily on the arguments of Fox's lawyers, that the general tenor of the show should then inform a viewer that Carlson is not stating actual facts about the topics he discusses and is instead engaging in exaggeration and non-literal commentary. Granted, Judge Viscockle's opinion does come from a judge, a generally highly educated and well-respected member of the community who spends the day listening to the most delicately weaved arguments by criminal masterminds.
Hold myself into contempt.
Listen to me,
you.
Listen to me.
Go yourself. I'm through here. Y'all done?
I'm finding you in contempt of court.
I don't care.
I know you don't. And I sentence you to 20 days for that. And if you say anything else, I'm gonna add 20 days for everything you say.
You.
40 days.
You again.
60.
Go yourself.
A year.
Your mama.
10 years.
Suck my
d- Do something. This is gonna be an interesting trial.
Oh yeah?
Oh yeah.
If I'm honest, not enough episodes of Law & Order play out like this did. It'd be a ratings hit. People should really get on that. But most viewers of Tucker Carlson aren't judges. They are people who come to Carlson because they, beyond all belief, trust him and agree with his loose, figurative, or hyperbolic opinions, at least according to his lawyers. A very similar defense to the Alex Jones, this is a performance artist defense.
Ladies and gentlemen of this supposed jury, you must now decide whether or not to reverse the decision for my client, Chef. I know he seems guilty, but ladies and gentlemen, this is Chewbacca. Now think about that for 1 minute. That does not make sense!
Fox attorneys noted that meeting the standard of actual malice requires more than just showing someone should have researched or investigated the subject before mouthing off. The Fox's team legal briefs compared Carlson's show to a radio talk show programs hosted by ex-MSNBC and Fox Business star Don Imus, who won a case more than 2 decades ago because an appellate court ruled the complainant of statements would not have been taken by reasonable listeners as factual pronouncements, but simply as instances in which the defendant radio hosts had expressed their views over the air in a crude and hyperbolic manner that was, over the years, become their verbal stock in trade. This is a rather rude slam of the Fox News After Dark audience, calling them both smart and stupid at the same time, allowing them to have their cake and deport it too. I would like to think that this means that you could just rely on the Fox News Before Dark programs, but the Daily Beast has reported that Fox News recently slashed its research team, cutting it by about 1/4 during modest network-wide layoffs, providing the clearest picture of why they quietly removed the fair and balanced from their company signage. We wouldn't want people to unreasonably assume that they were being either fair or balanced. On to lack of public welfare news. As most of you know by now, the main sources of a lot of our incomes currently are the various job schemes. There's the Keeper and the Seeker, and they have reached the end of phase one of Operation Get Back to Work. As the COVID supplements that have lifted the job seeker payment out of poverty wages for the first time, well, ever, are being slashed. That'll take fortnightly payments for singles to $815 each fortnight, or about $58 a day, keeping it above the dreaded $40 a day stranglehold previously placed on JobKeeper payments by an uncaring and unsympathetic government who sees the government paying poor people a little bit of money to eat as a terrible waste of government resources that could be used to overpay for land to build an airport, line the pocket of their friends, and gaslight the public into thinking it's a good use of public funds. I find it hard to think anyone could reasonably use the phrase bargain to describe overspending by $27 million on anything. Bargains are for savings no higher than $1,000, after which they evolve into a steal, a fucking steal, an investment, a tax write-off, negative gearing, and finally, a bribe. If you're going to pretend to care about people, you can at least learn to speak in their native tongue. While your payments are decreasing, the government is loosening the eligibility for both JobSeeker and youth allowance to allow you to earn a little more money without affecting your payments. Emphasis is on the little. Previously, you could earn $104 per fortnight pre-tax before your payment is affected, a disgustingly low amount of $52 a week. So still, low enough that doing a full season of fruit picking won't impact it. For income levels above $104 but less than $254 per fortnight, your payment will be reduced by 50 cents for every dollar you exceed the threshold. Whereas now, the income-free threshold for both payments will increase to the kingly sum of $300 per fortnight, and you'll lose 60 cents in job seeker payments for each dollar that you earn above that threshold. A comparatively reasonable amount of money to allow someone to earn, but it is easy to seem generous when you keep the people hungry at all times. Also changing are asset tests that determine when and if you can access JobSeeker. Asset limits will be reinstated, meaning that you won't be able to access JobSeeker if you have assets worth more than $482,000. If you own a home, that limit drops to $268,000, and the rates are different for couples. But hey, you're in a couple, and one of you can look that up yourselves, you lazy shits. Otherwise, why be in a couple? The liquid assets test is reinstated for new claims, which will require people with savings greater than $5,499 to wait a set period of time before receiving payments. Because how dare you try to have a fallback amount of money or do the exact thing that they tell you you should be doing, saving money. If you dare to save money while broke, you will be appropriately punished like all social climbing scum, stay in your lane. Under the changes, you'll face a reduction of 27 cents to your payment for every dollar your partner earns above $1,165 a fortnight. The change will mean your payments will reduce to zero if your partner earns more than $3,086.11 per fortnight, making it harder to justify being in a legally recognized relationship, especially as Centrelink has been getting pretty nosy with its entry questions, as seen here, asking questions like, do we use the same kitchen, laundry, or bathroom? Who has more than one laundry or kitchen in a house? Do they expect that housemates run on a I brought the appliance in so I'm the only one who can use it arrangement? As they have this handy box that tells me they will determine if I'm in a couple or not, I hope your housemate is okay with the designation Centrelink comes up with for you both. Apparently Services Australia has taken over and nationalised Tinder in an attempt to get people off JobSeeker, whatever it takes. The government has also toughened mutual obligation requirements for people on JobSeeker, meaning you'll have to search for up to 8 jobs each month. Victoria is still currently exempt from mutual obligations due to their little snafu with hotel quarantine. Social Services Minister Anne Rustin said, in economies and marketplaces where there's good employment, we'll be seeking people to undertake and search for 8 jobs. I do take issue with her use of the terminology of good employment when there are 13 times more people than there are jobs. And as I have told listeners before, my last job application experience was met with a rejection excuse that there were over 600 applicants. Not really a reason for rejection, as it is a cry of tired exasperation and a plea to be left alone. And when an amount of 1 hour a week is the acceptable level of work to be considered employed, I would definitely not call that good employment. Keeping that in mind, job seekers have been required to search for up to 4 jobs each month since early August. You can hear all of the jokes that I made about that in my previous episode, Job Seeking in a Pandemic. So what does this mean for Australia? Well, man trying to make a profit from being on Santa's naughty list and Prime Minister Scott Morrison is desperate to ensure the country is open again by Christmas, presumably so he can receive a free supply of coal to sell while it's still a viable source of income.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
And to justify cutting the life-saving job seeker slash keeper values and reminding people of his mantra.
The best form of welfare, and it has the obvious answer, is a job.
He seems to think this is the best road to economic recovery, and he should know, because his party is the party of good economic management, who led us strongly and confidently into a recession in a pre-COVID world. So, how is the party that by their own description means a safety net of assurance for all who are disadvantaged by life's chances and effective assistance to rebuild personal independence and control over one's life after unemployment, possibly able to justify changes that will mean cutting the $550 a fortnight coronavirus supplement payment designed to offer a safety net for a series of people disadvantaged by life's chances? The actions have been described by Deloitte as going to harm the economic recovery and decrease both GDP and employment across Australia. And that's coming from Deloitte, a company who has been recently fined £15 million over serious and serial failures in its audits. And that was just from one company. Not to mention that it will cost the equivalent of 145,000 full-time jobs over 2 years. And as we all know, the best form of welfare is destroying the equivalent of 145,000 jobs. Look, that's even more if we do it by the minimum legal definition of a job. Working 1 hour per week, which, if I did the maths right, should be roughly 5,800,000 equivalent 1 hour a week jobs. The treasurer and man constantly trying to figure out who farted, Josh Frydenberg, has previously confessed that the real rate of unemployment exists between 13 and 14%, not the publicly stated 6.8%. The ACTU further cites findings from the Mikkel Institute, a progressive institution for research dedicated towards providing innovative solutions for public policy changes that forecasts, with $300 per fortnight being slashed from any single worker's JobKeeper subsidy as of September 28th, the damage to the Australian economy could run as high as $760 million per week, or $1.52 billion, a gap the government couldn't possibly continue to cover. And when asked how Australians on JobKeeper would cover their lost income to do their part to help stimulate the economy, Minister for Families, Social Services and Hypocrisy, Anne Rustin, said JobKeeper recipients who are about to lose money should just go on the dole. That way the government wouldn't have to bear the costs any longer. Rustin said, "We have temporarily put arrangements in place so that our social security safety net is not just for people who have lost their jobs. It is able to provide a cushion for people who have had or fear their hours or income will be reduced. This is in direct contradiction to the usual use, starving people to such a severe degree that they'll accept any crap job. JobKeeper recipients on $1,200 per fortnight may be eligible for a partial dole payment, lifting their total income to $1,476. People receiving JobKeeper at the part-time rate of $750 per fortnight could receive another $546 in unemployment benefits, boosting their incomes to $1,295. Remember, that does emphasize maybe and could. Everyone is playing fast and loose with stability and possibility lately. It is, after all, unreasonable that the government should be expected to hold up businesses forever. These people should try getting money from the government instead. Simple. And finally, citizenship news. Australia, a land so down under, its human rights violations fly under the radar. We'll be making adjustments to the citizenship test, adding new questions which will be included on Australian citizenship tests from November 15. These questions will require potential citizens to understand and commit to our values like freedom of speech, mutual respect, equality of opportunity, the importance of democracy, and the rule of law. According to a statement put out by Alan Tudge, a member for the House of Representatives who thinks every house should represent him more faithfully. And so we have two major changes coming up. First, a new citizenship test with exciting new questions. The questions will attempt to quiz potential citizens on Australian values because everyone enjoys a quiz. Speaking of quizzes, get tickets now to my news quiz show in the upcoming Melbourne Fringe, just for funny. Attendance may or may not be mandatory under new citizenship laws. We all have to wait and see, but best be cautious and book now. We added some of our own questions here. See if you can decipher which ones are real and which ones are weird news questions in the first ever weird news citizenship test. Why is it important that all Australian citizens vote to elect the state and federal parliament exclusively from the coalition? Should people in Australia make an effort to learn English? Does this include Pauline Hanson? In Australia, can you encourage violence against a person or group of people if you have been insulted? Is there an exception for police? Should people tolerate one another where they find that they disagree? Is there an exception for the police? In Australia, are people free to choose who they marry and not marry unless they are gay? Oh, sorry, that was left over from the old citizenship test. Here we go. The new question is now, gay marriage is legal. Will people be free to choose to marry a dog? In Australia, is it acceptable for a husband to be violent towards his wife if she has disobeyed or disrespected him? Is there an exception for the police? Do you agree that men and women should be provided equality of opportunity when pursuing their goals and interests? Should the coalition be forced to abide by this ideal or continue its meritocracy charade? Should people's freedom of speech and freedom of expression be respected in Australia? Although these aren't the exact questions that'll be on the test, they do give a good example of how they will look. Acting Immigration Minister Alan Tudge has been leading the charge to update the citizenship test and assess the incoming eligibility of potential new citizens. But given the emphasis on potential citizens to understand and commit to our values like freedom of speech, mutual respect, equality of opportunity, the importance of democracy and the rule of law, Would Alan Tudge fit the criterion? Let's look back over the man who has tried to dismiss a senior judge's description of his criminal conduct, arguing it was merely commentary in the broader immigration dispute. Federal Court Justice Jeffrey Flick labeled Tudge's behavior as acting like he was above the law. Here, we see Tudge refuting his claim. Going on to explain, Tudge had failed to immediately release an Afghan man from immigration detention after he was granted a temporary protection visa, stating Tudge had intentionally and without lawful authority been responsible for depriving a person of his liberty, and said his conduct exposes him to both civil and potentially criminal sanctions. And Tudge's response to step down from his position in response to these claims was arguing the character assessment was made in commentary, and said that he would not be stepping down from his position, an argument that I will be taking to my next performance review, citing the case of Tudge versus Empathy. He has a history of this sort of stuff though. In 2017, the Australian Federal Police had to decide whether or not to investigate the then Human Services Minister Alan Tudge over the controversial disclosure of a welfare recipient's personal information to a journalist, because he thought it was legal to leak information, a staggering confession for a man who represents a party who has been ruthless on whistleblowers and actively changed the law to discourage them. Claimed that the now proven to be unlawful Centrelink RoboDebt system was working just fine and did not believe it was flawed, which, to be fair to him, if the intention was to overcharge the poor and scrape back money you aren't owed, then yeah, it works brilliantly. He even claimed that the system was a success. Here, Ministers Greg Hunt, Michael Suka, and Alan Tudge, also known as the Triangle of Contempt, avoided contempt charges after comments about weak terrorism sentencing in Victoria after apologising to court. And his department knew of the illegal sale of Medicare details on the dark web almost a fortnight before the illicit trade was exposed in a media report. And that was just 2017. I was let go from a job once for not being Homewares material after 2 weeks. This guy is still in a job now, 3 years after he has been found to have done all of these things. So let's look at 2018. Here he is, making misleading statements about a number of skilled immigrants intending to settle in Sydney or Melbourne, despite a migration program report actually showing a decrease in the number of skilled migrants intending to live in New South Wales and Victoria. He was actually the instigator of the previous version of all this, the Permanent Residence Australian Values Test. And in response to vandalising a Captain Cook statue in 2018, he said, "These vandals are trashing our national heritage and it should be prosecuted." He told local radio station 3AW, "I want Australia Day to be a great, unifying day for our country. It has been for many decades now." I mean, to me, this seems to be a fun new activity that is unifying more and more Australians, but I guess that's just my opinion. On to 2019. Alan Tudge teamed up with Twiggy Forrest on the cashless welfare card venture, which returned a profit of $5.1 million in the last financial year. Despite owning an apartment in Canberra, he claimed $27,192 in expenses for 97 nights in the capital. He boasted that he could claw back $1.9 billion in welfare fraud, despite knowing that there were a large number of errors. He continued to promote and defend the program, most likely because he knew it was a flawed system. This then led to over 2,000 deaths subsequent to the issue of these debts. Alan Tudge approved the media release of the personal records of a suicide victim of RoboDebt in a bid to bolster his department's side. So, you know, a relatively small number of fuck-ups in a single year for 2019, and now here. Even though 2020 is not finished, so there is time for him to add more this year, but so far, it has been revealed that Tudge was warned 76 times that the RoboDebt system was not enforceable. But you know the old saying, ignorance is trillions of dollars of unlawful bliss, as well as the previously mentioned criminal conduct. And that's everything he's done in 2020 so far. But it's been a busy few years for Alan Tudge. On top of all of this, there is now a controversial new English language requirement, a proposal so laced with dreadful irony it can't be read in the one of 7,000 Indigenous Australian languages that are now in danger of dying out by the end of the century, because nobody outside of Indigenous community is encouraged to speak any of them. In regards to the proposal of the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, said, "I don't want to see people who come to Australia to be vulnerable. And if your English language skills are not strong or non-existent, then you will be more vulnerable in Australia." He of course said it after he locked the gates behind him after attending the daily headcounts of Nauru and Manus. It's a tough job, but someone has to do it. Those refugees won't persecute themselves, you know. The statement might not have been made by Tudge himself, but it is indicative of the proposals that he supports and the company that he keeps. If you were assessing this guy for Australian values, he would pass with flying colours. Seems more recently, Australian values include a mindless prejudice for those different to us, avoiding punishment, unless of course you're poor, and claiming that we're all in it together, despite the obviousness of the differences in treatment between the tax brackets. But if you were to assess him on his language ability, well, seems Tudge is really struggling with some very basic concepts. When you need to be told something 76 times and you still fail to comprehend the message, it strikes me as a distinct lack of comprehension skills. A lack of understanding of the ideas like criminality, privacy, theft, bullying, fraud. He needs to brush up on his English. Someone needs to get him a copy of the Macquarie Dictionary, Australia's Dictionary, and Worst Game Show Prize, as seen on Letters and Numbers. Thank you guys so much for your time, for making it to the end of the episode. As always, I appreciate you choosing to listen to us, and by us I mean me. I'm just one more time going to remind you, I do have shows, digital shows, in the Brighton and Melbourne Fringe festivals for relatively cheap pricing. And I have three upcoming news quizzes called Just for Funny in the Melbourne Fringe. And I would love you guys to come check them out. Obviously, you're into this sort of thing. You're into the news. So I feel like this show would be right up your alley. I get guests from around the Australian comedy scene onto the show. And we talk news and we talk silliness. And it's a good time for everyone. So please check those out. Send some money this way and help me to subsidize the year and make it a little bit worth my time. But other than that, look after yourselves and stay safe and wash your hands, wear a mask, and look out for your fellow listeners. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.